sit around wondering just what the hell to do with your life. Only get one chance, but you seem to always think twice.
You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
I'm getting tired of trying to always be nice. You're sweet and sincere, but so won't I feel. What do you want me to do? Make all the big decisions for you.
Fire consumes and casts a bright light. May our chalice flame consume our regrets for the past, our fears for the future, and our worries about today. May it light for us a path of joy and peace. The author of these chalice words is Deborah Burrell of the UU Church of Birmingham, Alabama. Good morning and welcome to our service of worship. An especially warm welcome to those worshipping with us for the first time today, or those we haven't seen for a while. My name's Jenny Dyster. I'm the current president of the COM and a regular worship leader. Generations of seekers of truth and meaning have worshipped as Unitarians since 1854 in South Australia. The land we meet on today is the traditional land of the Kaurna people. We respect and bless their spiritual relationship with their country and their elders past and present. Our Unitarian Church is a spiritual community, one that supports you in following your own spiritual path. Our principles are dear to us. They're on the white banner there in front of the organ. You could well think most people could agree with those. You don't need to come to church to come to these conclusions. But that's probably not why you come to church. The principles are consistent with an atheist, human or religious perspective, but we come to church for community. We don't prescribe your theology or direct you on a spiritual journey. Your path is yours to find and follow, and the role of the church is to support you. Please do join us after the service for conversation. No coffee today, but the good news is that we've got enough for a roster for June. We'll actually resume just before June, because on the last day of the month there'll be a cafe-style service with coffee, tea and possibly something to nibble, finger food that doesn't need utensils. Today's service is part of a series that I've developed using a text published this year by Susan Littow, The Power of Ethics.
Thank you.
Now time for the reading, which will be presented by Peter Whittam.
For many years, my mantra has been, ethical decision-making tethers us to our humanity. It helps us to keep human beings front and centre at all times. My sincere hope is that the power of ethics will enable every reader to make human-centric choices that they can be proud of, both now and in the future. The importance of integrating ethics into our decisions affects all of daily life in the 21st century, from whether we follow expert recommendations to protect our own and others' health, to our responses when we or a friend stumbles ethically. Our world is one in which ethical errors and successes are amplified. Misconduct spreads more widely and unpredictably, embeds itself more stubbornly, and entangles more individuals and institutions than ever before. Yet, as counterintuitive as it may seem, we actually have more opportunities than ever before to make ethical decisions. To seize these moments, we have to appreciate what drives ethics on the edge. Although I didn't realise it then, that meeting at Columbia Law School helped define my early thinking about the ethics edge. The edge is the line where the law no longer guides and protects us, leaving ethics as the lone standard by which to gauge our behaviour. And the space in which ethics becomes our only guide is expanding. In this zone, people, companies, innovations, phenomena we may never have imagined would, could, or should intertwine, in fact do. For instance, social media can connect us to our families, to friends, to job openings, and to learning about other cultures. It can also be a source of inaccurate medical information, hate mongering, and bullying that spreads far and wide. Why does the edge move, and why do unanticipated interconnections occur? First, the law lags behind the fast-moving changes in technology and innovation. Second, we face multiple global and systemic risks, from climate change to the advent of fake news to pandemics. Third, new technologies and global risks join forces to amplify both modern and age-old dangers. If we can integrate ethics into our everyday decision-making, we can better think about our place in the world. We can positively affect our relationships and our impact on the society around us. On the other hand, a failure to integrate ethics into our decisions is the most dangerously underestimated global systemic risk we face, whether as individual citizens, leaders, organisations, or nations. It is the existential threat at the source of so many others.
Well, it's not your imagination. We are living in a time of moral decline. It's not the only or the biggest or most significant period of moral decline, but it's the most important one for us because we're living it. Publicly, government leaders are acting against the welfare of their citizens. Companies prioritise profits over health and safety. And technology poses risks to society with little or no repercussion to those responsible. We struggle about how much to protect children, how to make consumer choices, ethical investments, and we're conflicted about how to handle misconduct at work or at home or just out and about. I might be a boomer, but I'm not going to play the ain't it awful or bang on about how idealistic we all were in the 70s. In fact, I will restrict myself to one example of bad corporate behaviour. As Unitarians, we believe in the inherent worth of all people and don't generally dwell on our potential for evil. Having read Susan Littell's The Power of Ethics, I propose sharing with you her view that ethics can be used to create a sea change of positive decisions that can ripple outwards towards families, communities, workplaces and the wider world, offering opportunities for good. And I'll rely on Susan to the point of plagiarism, of unpacking bad behaviour and talking about a four-step process for everyday decisions. One force driving many ethical choices we make is the pressure to make binary choice. Will I use Uber or not? Should I post my kid's photo on Facebook? Now, Susan's an ethics advisor. She's currently chair of the Council of the London School of Economics and Political Science and a lecturer in policy and law at Stanford and at the law school. She's not a fan of binary choice. In fact, the first chapter is entitled Banished Binary. For guidance and protection in life, we need to look well beyond the law. A simple example is a restraining order. You can't get one of these until you've suffered significant bashing and undergone severe emotional distress. When new technology arrives, you can't rely on the law to mandate adequate protocols for use or safety equipment. The process of lawmaking, with its collection of data analysis, bringing this to the attention of our elected representatives, and then them deciding whether there's enough votes in it for them to pursue this particular issue, and then you've got to get the legislation through both houses of parliament. Well, that can take years. The law tells you what you can get away with. Ethics tethers us to our humanity. It helps to keep human beings front and centre at all times. If we fail to integrate ethics into our decision making, we're a menace as individuals, leaders, or nations. So let's start with a story. Sunday morning, March 2019, we're in Addis Ababa, about to board a flight to Nairobi in Kenya, along with 156 others from 35 different countries. Our pilot has 8,000 flight hours under his belt and an excellent flying record. The plane is a four-month-old Boeing 737 MAX 8 jet, the latest model from the world's largest aerospace company. Shortly after takeoff, an alarm sounds. It warns the pilot the nose of the jet is 75 degrees above the wind. The software called Maneuvering Characteristics Augmentation System, MCAS, automatically activates to push the nose down. Catches. It's a false alarm, false information. The two angle of attack sensors gave conflicting readings and one of them set off the anti-stall system. The first officer flips switches that powers down the MCAS. The captain pulls on the control column to manually lift the nose, but aerodynamic forces acting against the tail make it impossible. The force is too great. In desperation to try and get control of the tail, they turn the system back on, but the MCAS system kicks in and forces the nose down. So Flight 302 heads for the ground at more than 575 miles an hour, impacting so forcefully the plane is buried 33 feet below the barren field in which it landed, and the rescue helicopters had trouble finding the crash site. No survivors. Nor were there any survivors 4 months earlier in Indonesia when Lion Flight 610 landed in the sea. It rose and fell 21 times in 12 minutes with the pilot fighting with his own plane. Now, after the crash in Africa, China and Ethiopia immediately grounded the aircraft. 2 days later, the UK, Germany, France, Australia, Malaysia and Singapore banned MAX aircraft. All up, 60 nations grounded their fleets. Boeing executive Dennis Muilenburg made a personal call to Donald Trump to assure him there was no cause for alarm. The MAX aircraft was safe. The FAA issued a continued airworthiness notification, promising to take appropriate action should data indicate the need to do so. Well, Boeing had recorded $100 billion in total revenue in 2018. It employed 145,000 people. It did business with 130,000 domestic suppliers, including General Electric, the maker of the engine. And indeed, it was money and competition that drove the tragedy. In 2010, the French company Airbus released a plane that used 20% less fuel. Boeing responded by updating the 737 with new, more fuel-efficient engines. Catch was, the engines wouldn't fit below the wings. The new position slightly above the wing threw off the aerodynamics, so the nose could pitch too high during takeoff. That's why the MCAS system was developed. Now, you might remember the guy who landed the plane in the Hudson River at the time, and everybody survived. Well, by this time he'd retired, but of course he had something to say. And this is what he said. He explained to US congressional subcommittees that these scenarios were not included in flight simulator training. And he maintained the common sense position that pilots should not have to compensate for inherent flaws in aircraft design. Even Donald Trump jumped the right way on this issue, despite the phone call from Boeing's boss. So what went wrong with Boeing? They failed on three binary decisions. Firstly, in 2017, when they realised they'd made a safety feature a premium option rather than a standard one, the question was, do we disclose repair or not? And they took the position that the alert only provided supplemental information and was not a safety feature, and planned to fix the error 3 years later in a software update. Secondly, after the earlier crash in Indonesia in late 2018, the question was whether to recall planes and retrain pilots once they were certain of the cause, or do we keep them in the air? They chose to assume pilot error. Wouldn't have been any trace of racism, would it? Regardless of what the pilot should or should not have known, the faulty software caused both crashes, and the third decision in 2019 to continue to fly was made by Boeing and the FAA in defiance of 60 countries giving them the right answer. Now let's look at another colossally successful company, Airbnb. Brian Chesky and Joe Gebbia struggled in 2007 to pay the rent. There was a major design conference in town, so they decided to inflate three airbeds and cook breakfast for their guests who were attending the conference. Wittily, they named their accommodation Airbed and Breakfast. Together with Nate Vachachik, they launched a business worth $26 billion by 2020. 7 million listings, tiny homes, castles, apartments and tree houses in 100,000 cities across the globe. Now, a private home used as a short-term rental is neither a hotel nor is it strictly a home. Airbnb had advanced an edge. It's part of the so-called blended economy, peer-to-peer services, a sharing economy. What could possibly go wrong? Well, in 2017, a young law student booked a cabin in the mountains of Big Bear in California to share with her fiancé. This was a month ahead. A week ahead, she messaged the host about two extra guests plus a couple of dogs and agreed to pay an extra $50 a night. A snowstorm turned their two-hour drive into a harrowing 5 hours of rain, road closure and sheer hell. The student texted the owner about their imminent arrival, and the owner denied agreeing to the extra two guests. So the student gave her the benefit of the doubt and sent screenshots confirming the extra charges. The reply was, no way was she going to rent the cabin on the busiest weekend of the year for $50 a night. You must be insanely high. When told she'd be reported to Airbnb, she replied that no way would she accept the booking. One word says it all, Asian, and this country will not be told what to do by foreigners. Very hurtful for the young so-called Asian who had called America home since she was 3 years of age. She wasn't alone, of course. On the other side of the country, Gregory Selden, a young black man, had a similar experience of rejection in Philadelphia. He created two fake white profiles on the same day, and the same host approved both. He wrote about it on Twitter and received thousands of retweets saying, same thing happened to me. Harvard Business School conducted a study which quantified the finding. Renters with black-sounding names like Lakeisha or Tyrone were 16% less likely to be accepted than Greg or Anne. In 2016, Brian Chesky acknowledged racism wasn't on their minds when they founded the company. There were lots of things we didn't think about when we, as three white guys, designed the platform. Now, the blended business model comprises internet and hospitality. It should have been clear to the founders that both elements had a risk of racism. Racism infiltrates online exchanges. In addition, it's well documented for most of the 20th century to be rife in the hospitality business, so much so that there are laws preventing ordinary hotels discriminating on the basis of ethnicity. So what did Airbnb do about the young ones stranded in the snowy mountains? Well, they granted the young woman a full refund, they reimbursed the group for the hotel, and they stripped the cabin owner of her host status. Chesky also came up trumps ethically when the boot was on the other foot and it was badly behaved guests. In 2019, a Halloween party at a B&B rental turned into the scene of a deadly shooting. In response, Chesky created 24/7 worldwide neighbour hotlines and they began to check listings for accuracy, quality and safety. They began a rigorous review process for high-risk reservations to stop unauthorised parties before they began. His aim was to fortify trust. He said, "Our real innovation is not allowing people to book a home, it's designing a framework to allow millions of people to trust each other." When they figured out they had a problem, Airbnb leadership didn't deflect responsibility or promise a software patch. They made thoughtful changes that fortified trust. Now, Boeing can repair planes and it can even fire its CEO, which it did, but repairing trust will be much harder. The take-home message is to recognise the hazards in binary thinking in a grey world. We have the power and responsibility to use our voices and take actions that prevent further harm when faced with an ethical choice. Here are the four steps. Firstly, what are my guiding principles? What do I stand for? There's Boeing's enduring values, integrity, quality, safety, diversity, inclusion, trust, respect, corporate citizenship, stakeholder success. I don't think so. I think it was profit. That's Airbnb's. I mean, that doesn't look very professional, does it? And you wouldn't think with this collection of be a host, champion the mission, every frame matters, be a serial entrepreneur, that's a little hoot, that's a little joke about their origins. Simplify and embrace the adventure, but it worked better because it was meant. That's the first thing, is to really check out your values, not what you've got on paper, but what you actually really think and what you really do. Secondly, do I have the information I need to make this decision? To comply with this step, you need to be very cognizant of your assumptions and different points of view, aware of sources of information, and alert and responsive to new information. Thirdly, who or what could influence or be affected by the decision? Another way of asking it is, who are the stakeholders, or what are the stakeholders? Who are people? And of course, what could mean rivers, air quality, that sort of thing. And fourthly, what are the potential consequences of my decision in the short, medium and long term? Now, if you cast your mind back to the children's story today, I think you might assume that the woman who bought the painting of the boa constrictor really should have foreseen a problem. Ducks may quack, but boas constrict. You may recall Airbnb didn't say it's not our responsibility what people do on our platform. They didn't turn a complex ethical dilemma into an oversimplified binary judgment, pilot error versus our error. Instead, they gathered more information, acted on it, paying compensation, expelling feral hosts and feral guests. But it's interesting to challenge our responses to questions that at first glance seem binary. And then when we think about it, there are more aspects and dimensions. Let's go to one I mentioned earlier, Should I use Uber or not? The taxi drivers say not. Well, they would, wouldn't they? But they do have a point about exploitation. But rather than just saying no, it's probably worth considering, especially during these days of the pandemic, how many people out of work are keeping their car on the road and food on the table by driving for Uber. Another simple example is posting pictures of your kids on Facebook. You don't know how they're going to feel about it in 5 years' time. You don't know who's going to look at it. You don't know who's going to reuse the image. In the US, it's estimated that 81% of children under two have a Facebook presence, some before birth. Ultrasound. Sharenting is the term for it. More than half of teenagers report being bullied online. But on the other hand, kids, grandparents, cousins, aunties and uncles get a real kick out of sharing images, especially when the tyranny of distance or COVID prevents face-to-face engagements. It's clear that a non-binary response is more useful than I'll post it or I won't post it. Privacy levels can regulate who gets to see the image. I know many parents in our congregation negotiate the notion of consent with their children. They ask their kids, is it okay if we put this picture of us on the Sunday Club page or in our family group? Or should I just send a print copy to Gran? No one else? The complexities of family life and politics. We do live in a complex world, but it's one in which ethical decision-making binds us in the common optimistic project of benefiting and projecting society and humanity. We can all make decisions reflecting to future generations what we will tolerate for ourselves and what we will demand of our legacy, rather than submitting to whatever trajectory morally questionable leaders, innovators, or business interests define. Progress is not progress when collateral damage is not addressed. We can all seek solutions and not just point out where others have fallen short. Hopeful choices are within our reach, and our story depends on us making them. Today's benediction comes from Eric Williams. Blessed is the path on which you travel. Blessed is the body that carries you upon it. Blessed is your heart that has heard the call. Blessed is your mind that discerns the way. May you go forth in peace.
I'm a new soul, I came into this strange world, hoping I can learn a bit about how to give and take. But since I came here, felt the joy and the fear, finding myself making every possible mistake. La 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 la.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianessay@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching Essay Unitarians.
I'm a young soul in this very strange world, hoping I could learn a bit about what is true and fake. But while this hate tries to communicate, finding lust and love is not always easy to make. La 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 la. This is a happy end, 'cause you don't understand. Everything you have done, why's everything gone wrong? This is a happy end, come and take me your hand, I will take you far away. I'm a new soul, I came into this strange world, hoping I can learn a bit about love, give and take. But since I came here, felt the joy and the fear, finding myself making every possible mistake. La 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 la, la 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 la, la 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 la, la la la, la la la, la 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 la, la 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 la, la 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 la, la la la, la la la.